Hi, Ann Lynn, alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 10th, 2006. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. I'm very nervous, so just bear with me until I sort of get moving here. Thank you very much, Sam, for asking me to speak. It was very fortuitous. I don't know. And I put it on my calendar and then managed to promptly forget about it until about middle of January when it started showing up on my calendar. It's like, oh my God. So I started practicing then. I'm one of those people that, you know, I spend most of my life worrying about what other people are thinking about me and why are you judging me, and that's not right. Like, no, I'm actually okay, I'm fine. But you put me alone in the car and I'm either belting out show tunes or I'm rehearsing my AA speech. So that's what you get. And then, of course, I get up here, and I'm like, I have no clue what to talk about. But that's not exactly true. I was 26 when I got sober. I drank for about 10 years, give or take. As I sort of stayed sober, I've actually remembered a little bit more, and there were a couple, like, unfortunate Christmases, and it's just been interesting. I got married not too long ago, and my husband has started coming home with me for Christmas, and there have been stories about family gatherings or whatever, and they still actually, I think, believe what I said at those times, and so I'm, like, leaning over and going, not exactly what happened. You know, I just don't ever think you went caroling. I'm like, I was drunk that night. So, and I just actually had dinner with my parents, and I felt they've been very supportive in my sobriety. They were very concerned about my drinking, as they should have been, and so they saw a lot of it. And have since, in the last 5 years, made, amazing changes in their relationship with my parents. And I was like, well, it isn't an open meeting. I just said this to my mom. Like, if you guys want to come, you can. But, you know, please, this is not expected or whatever. And she's like, no, we're good. This is your thing, just go on. So I'm like, okay, not a problem, you know, because they've lived it, they need to see, you know, they've enjoyed the fruits of AA and the miracles that they've seen in my life, you know, and they've heard, you know, a lot of friends speak for me over the last 5 years, and my best friend is actually my maid of honor at my wedding, and she has an interesting story, and my mom just can't quite make the two meet. And, but anyways, I started drinking at 16. It just seemed like the right thing to do. You know, I was uncomfortable, and I'd always been sort of uncomfortable, but really, really uncomfortable with the idea of you finding out how uncomfortable I was. So, you know, there's like this fear and anxiety, like an uncomfortableness, like wrapped in an even bigger blanket of like petrification. Like, I'm so absolutely sure that everybody can see right through me and how awful and miserable I am in my own life, which I really had no reason to be. You know, I am just a normal, only child, spoiled brat-ish, you know, kid from the suburbs. You know, and I worked really hard to fill that mold or to fit that hole or whatever. You know, I did good grades. I was in band. I got to high school and I started, you know, running track, playing softball, and so like trying to do all of the stuff that would get me into a good college because now I got water. I had to get out of Virginia Beach. Like, we gotta go. This is just not working here. And that was before I started drinking. So, I don't know how I knew that alcohol was gonna fix me. You know, I mean, a few drunken escapades as a 10-year-old really doesn't make me an alcoholic. But, it's opportunity and necessity, I guess, crossed. And my parents went to town, and also a good reason why they're not here. So I had a party, you know, I was pissed off at the boy I was dating at the time, and there were people milling around, our pool was still open, I had a trampoline, I was like, come on over, yeah, you can bring beer, sure, not a problem, and they brought beer, and people came over, and I drank a lot of ice house beer, and I didn't even like beer, and now I'm like, my favorite, I love it, you know, and I don't think I threw up, but I definitely remember just, you know, it's one of those moments that people remember, like, I don't know, their prom or a piano recital or whatever, like, those I've tried to block out, but that night, it was amazing, you know, and it was just, like, finally sort of, like, filled me up, you know, it didn't matter anymore that I didn't have your approval, I didn't care. Like, really, and I was still very aware, like, popular girls, me, but just didn't seem to be quite as insurmountable as it was, like, you know, Tuesday walking down the hall. And so I worked very hard, very quickly to divide everything up. You know, my parents were going to get, like, this much, and then we had to sort of rearrange. I was sort of going to a Baptist church at the time, nothing against Southern Baptists, but they said don't drink and do other stuff, and I started drinking, and so all of that just started to break. I was like, sorry, this actually fills me up and does a much better job than you guys are doing at the time. I appreciate it. Gotta go. But my parents still thought I was very actively involved, just got me out of the house on a Wednesday night, and so I just, I don't know, how do you find people who like to party like you do? I have Virginia Beach, Navy Town, yes, and, you know, I was very fortunate. I had a lot of good guys in my life that really just took care of me. You know, I was the girl that, you know, walked into the house and I had my Corona drawer in the refrigerator. And I just, you know, I felt so special. You know, it's like, I guess, having a bartender where you can just go in and plop down and there's no tab, there's no charge, there's, you know, it's just where I felt comfortable. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. Minor issues, but more like, I have 28 bottles and 27 bottle caps. Where is that last bottle cap? So I was very hypersensitive to, like, my parents coming home, to the trash. That bottle cap was in the driveway, by the way. And, you know, they came home and the house was cleaner than when they left it. You know, vacuumed, aired out, all of everything. And, you know, because I really wanted to hold on to this lifestyle. And I really thought that I could do it. You know, so off school, I went to JMU. Still in the marching band, and finally where it's cool to be in the marching band, there are about 500 of us. And if you don't know this about band orgs, we do like to drink, and we're very, very good at it. And when there's 500 of us, it makes it a party. Like, you're actually, like, in the majority, and you're cool all of a sudden. It just takes a while. And so my very first night there, that was literally my only attempt at controlled slash enjoyed drinking. You know, I had been filled to the brim with all the horror stories of all the frat boys out there from all the Navy boys down there. So I knew. I was like, no. I know what you're up to. I'm going to get my own beer, thank you very much. And, you know, I can take care of myself. And so I did. I had two beers that night. Doesn't matter that I got to the party and home from the party with people I had no clue who they were picking up on campus, but that's also irrelevant. But that was it. That was, like, my one night. That was it. In the next 10 years or so, like, one night of two beers, and that's, like, literally, so couldn't really say that I was a very good controlling drinker. But I was a very good juggler, and so I did manage to do very well for about 3.5 years, and partied like I wanted to, and was still able to show up and go to class and go to school. It's not really anything that I did. That's just sort of God-given intelligence and luck. You know, I was good enough to scrape by. And I guess not quite sick enough to throw in the towel yet. And, you know, life was great. I remember it was the semester before I turned 21, and that's like the golden years of my drinking. Because I really did have it all. You know, I was popular, and I had tons of friends. I was doing very well in school. I had plans every night. People were calling me, and it's messaging me, and I was, like, just literally managing to, like, juggle everything. And I was getting away with driving under a restricted license because the DUI I got in the year before. But everybody gets those in school, especially in Harrisonburg, big college, big drinking town. We have riots. I just got a DUI. Like, I wasn't part of the riots, so let's just be grateful, people. And then so that semester ended very successfully, you know, riding my laurels all over the place and turning 21. And that was it. Like, literally. Like, my drinking went from being crazy to borderline, she might need to slow it down. Not drinking before presentations is probably something you might want to look into in the future. You know, it works when you smell up something like tequila to your 9 o'clock class, but if you're having to present something, maybe find something else that's what you like, coffee. But, you know, that was the last vestige of any sort of control my drinking had. It's the 21 thing. And now it's gone. And I was in Greece at the time with the marching band, which was real cool. And I went back to school early, and I was going to, like, buy all this beer and liquor for the house, like, the apartment I was living in, and I did, and then I proceeded to drink it all by myself. And that was it. I was done. You know, I went from being sort of a morning drinker to, like, pump myself up to, like, I'm a morning drinker so that I don't have to get up. Because if you drink enough to realize, like, okay, I'm going to give it 6, go to campus, study for the econ exam, I've got it at 11, that's, you know, 4 hours, we're good to go. No, at 6:30, I'm drunk and very happy to be so because now I don't have to worry about anything. Yeah, you don't really do that. It's not a way to succeed. I don't really succeed anything either, but, you know, that was a bit, I mean, you know, sort of like drinking took me up 1 year and then, like, literally the next. It was very fast. At least it probably seemed that way to everybody looking at my life. I was not as surprised, but even still, I guess I was surprised by the little fight I had. You know, and I recognized pretty early on that I was an alcoholic. I mean, you can't be going to school at parties like mine did and drink like I do and be the odd girl out. Like, you just, you know. No, but I didn't care. So, left JMU. Wasn't going to graduate on time, so, time to go. Let's go. So I moved to Cheese. That disaster. More drinking. Horrible. Sent home. Even more drinking because now I'm back living with my mother at 22, no college degree. Life is in shambles. Heart's in shambles. So, what do? You drink. And then you try to kill yourself. But the hospital didn't really listen during my intake because I didn't want to kill myself per se. Like, you don't take a Lady Bic to your wrist because you, like, really want to die. I just didn't want to get yelled at. It was 10 o'clock in the morning, and I was so drunk that seemed like a good idea. They didn't seem to really care. And, of course, I was usually fairly, like, docile drunk. Like, I was a crier. You know, I really liked to be by myself. But occasionally, though, I could get feisty, and so my mom came home that morning because my boyfriend had called her at work and said she's really, really drunk and she's at home. And so my mom came home, and he had told me that he had called her. And I didn't want to hear again. So I locked myself in the bathroom, and I'm, like, screaming out the bathroom door, like, what I'm doing, per se, I guess. I don't know. So she called the cops. The cops came. My mother lived in a quiet, like, condo community of people who were, like, you know, sort of just getting ready to retire, like, early retirement. Like, they're just enjoying, like, a nice quiet Wednesday morning or whatever day it was. So then the police show up and the fire trucks, and they're, like, storming up the bedroom or storming up the stairs to the bathroom, and they're, like, doing the sewer the hard way. And I screamed something highly inappropriate. And so they broke down the door or kicked the door, and it was not a big issue. I don't really remember this, but I had the bruises and stuff to prove it. They hauled me down the stairs and sort of I come to face down in the grass, looking up at, like, 4 or 5, like, little old ladies, well, not that old, but, like, looking at me from the window. And, like, and that's why we're going to need a really big drink later. You know, and that's just sort of one. It was just an average day for my mom. You know, I embarrassed her plenty of times more. You know, I'd be falling drunk at the pool, and then it's just, I mean, just a disaster. So, psych ward a week didn't even make a difference. You know, the visiting hours were during the AA meeting, of course. I'm not going to go to the AA meeting. I got out, went to the liquor store, and bought alcohol. So I had my hospital bracelet on, too. The cashier at the liquor store pointed that out, that I might want to take that off. All right, we're not going to come back here for another 2 days. And that was when I was 22. That's about as funny as it got. And the next 4 years were just horrendous. You know, it's a blur to me now. I'm sure my mom and my dad at some points could fill you in on the gruesome details. But, you know, at the end, you know, I didn't want to go out. I like cheap vodka. I like a lot of it. You know, you go out, you get caught. Shoot. Might as well stay home. I mean, chicken wings come to your house now. Like, it's amazing. So, that pretty much just fell right there. I mean, and there were, like, starts and stops. You know, I'd get a new job, or I would get an opportunity to, you know, go back to Europe, and, you know, all of these things, relationships, friends, jobs, whatever, new psychiatrists, new counselors, you know, the IOP thing, like, I mean, my parents offered it to me all over the place, you know, and I said yes, you know, I politely nodded my head and then went and did exactly what I wanted to, which was drink. All the time. And so, you know, 2005, 2006, I'm finding a job that I'm showing up most days for. I'm still drinking on the job, but I'm working for a political campaign now, so by 7 o'clock, everybody else starts drinking, and that just sort of levels out the playing field. Now I'm not the only person that smells like alcohol. And so things are actually sort of okay, like at least the outside world. I mean, I wrecked my boss's car and blamed it on a volunteer, you know, just all sorts of lovely things like that. But I was muddling through. And then, you know, sort of the personal life fell apart, and then there came the second DUI, which is really fuzzy. When I finally went to court for it and they read, my lawyer was reading to me, like, what the officer had written in his report, and I had no clue about some of the stuff. And it's really bad, you know, and that's something that I am very, very grateful that my mother or my father had to hear. My lawyer worked very hard, and I think so did the prosecutor out in Prince William County. It's very nice, even though I don't like Prince William County, but just throwing that out there, he's my lawyer, that was very nice. He worked very hard to sort of just get me a deal. No testifying, because I mean, the cop obviously remembered me very well. And so we had a deal. I wasn't going to go to jail. And they went to, like, file the appropriate paperwork, do the lawyer thing. And the judge was like, no, have you read this? Like, I don't care if she comes in here with her parents and a book. Like, no, this girl's got to go somewhere. And so they sent us back out, and my lawyer was like, well, no, you have to go to jail, or you can do 90 days in rehab. And I said, I'll take 30 days in jail, thank you very much, and I'll be back next week to turn myself in. So, everybody's faces are now. I love that. I love when I tell that story, because everybody's like, oh, you went to rehab. I'm like, no. Little math lesson. 90 days, 30 days. Like, my life was so busy, I had to get back out and get back to it in, like, 30 days. Like, I was going to miss something. Not too much. Not at all. The only thing I did manage to do between, like, all of that was figure out how to steal my neighbor's car so I could drive to the liquor store on a suspended license after breaking and entering and now Grand Theft Auto. So that's me. And my mom took me up to Manassas County Jail or Manassas City Jail, whatever it is. And I was pretty drunk when I got there. So first day or so, kind of a blur, and I was in jail, and I was there. I got a letter from my mom, and my parents were very hopeful and counting on jail to fix me, save me, scare me, do something, you know, give me the incentive I need to start over again, you know, their honorable student, piano player, runner, girl who goes to church, and, you know, has friends, like, is now in jail. And we're lying to my grandmother about it because we can't tell anybody about this. And, you know, that's how I know that I didn't need any further evidence at that point, but obviously jail did not fix me. You know, it can't. You can't threaten me into sobriety. Like, you're going to make me even more fearful and that's just going to, like, send me out the door faster. But you can't comfort me or be nice to me because then that just means I'm going to walk all over you to get to the drink anyway. So how do you want to do this? Up front or certainly more, you know, around the back door kind of way. But I got out, and I went and got several handles of vodka with the 45 minutes I had, because they had to go to the grocery store to fix me, like, a nice big welcome-home dinner after jail. So I hopped in a cab, go to the liquor store, and that's really pretty much the last thing I remember until July 4th. That was May. Between May and July 4th, no clue. Really, the 30 days in first sobriety, I don't know what it did to my body chemistry, but my tolerance was shot. And I don't know why, but literally I would start blacking out. Like, as soon as alcohol got in my system, like, I was done. I was blacked out. But still able to drink more, obviously. I was falling down a lot. I mean, it was bad. Like, it was eminently, like, homelessness was like, right there. Like, it was coming very quickly. And so one morning, I don't remember what day it was, I don't remember anything, but it was 7:30, that's what I do remember, and I'm sitting in, like, my counselor's office with both of my parents, which is never good, and it's so early, and they're so talking about me, and he said, you have to go, and I said, okay, because they've been threatening me with this whole, like, sending me away thing for a long time, and I was just like, no, I can't go. Life here. Like, what am I supposed to do? God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, obviously, just kept my mouth shut. Enough for me to say, fine, whatever. I did have a slight grasp that they weren't kidding this time. Like, this was not going to be good if I didn't do this. And so, after rehab, I went. And rehab is a lot like school. I do very well there. I'm a leader, and I can talk to people, and I have 30 days to just be whoever I want. You know, I didn't have to be honest. I didn't have to do anything except, like, blow smoke at people. And so I did. I mean, I had no intention of staying sober. I wanted my gold star, my certificate, and I got all of that, and I got my counselor to say, like, oh, you're going to do so well. And then, I don't know, maybe about halfway through, my parents came up, and my mom's like, yeah, you can't come back to Richmond. Excuse me? She's like, yeah, you can't come home. I was like, all right, that doesn't make me like you anymore. But they wanted to send me to Arizona, and I said no. I'm like, I am not going to Arizona. I can't come to Richmond. I'm going to Northern Virginia. And my mom was like, you can't go there. I was like, yes, I can. Because, like any good alcoholic, I had a boyfriend in rehab, and he lived in Greenbelt, which is sort of close to the Northern Virginia area. And also had an ex-boyfriend that I was trying to get back in Sterling, which is also in the Northern Virginia area. So this is just going to be fabulous. Great idea. So I get sober, I get out, I go home to a meeting in Richmond, I pick up a 30-day chip, and then, like, literally the next day later, I'm moving to this woman's home in Arlington. And for the next 3 months, I just literally, it was awful. Any illusions I had that I was a nice girl who drank too much, and that once the drinking was removed, that I would return to the nice girl that I thought I was, I don't know where that came from even, didn't happen. And I was so confused. Like, what do you mean I'm still lying and cheating and manipulating and not getting caught? Like, sobriety has ruined my life. I can't even lie convincingly anymore. I'm getting caught all over the place. I was like, I was drunk for 10 years. I didn't get caught this much. But thank God, you know, I did not. And this, you know, 5 years later, I should probably listen, I was about 4, where I realized that really was recovery in my life and nothing else. You know, he took the willingness I had and worked with what he had, you know, and he got me dry out, sort of, not very dry, but just very miserable. Not sleeping, not eating, just, you know, running on pure, like, panic and fear, but I don't want to tell anybody. So, yeah, I was a crazy girl. And I had no money, I had no insurance, so the very expensive shrink was out with medications. And my rehab boyfriend had a sponsor, and he said that you're not allowed to go out with her until she gets a sponsor and goes to meetings. So I got a sponsor, and I went to meetings. And AA was the last stop on the blog. I did not want to be here. I did not want to be on your team. I did not want to be on, like, the project that is your life, you know? I certainly don't want to write, you know? It's like, literally, my excuse was, I read The Diary of Anne Frank when I was in eighth grade. I didn't like writing in a journal then, so I'm certainly not going to like writing now. And my sponsor was like, okay, that's fine. No problem. And obviously, that attitude has changed. And that was just all AA. And the women who were picking me up and taking me to meetings. I guess I just sort of got in the car. You know, I didn't have, like, this great surrender. I was lonely. You know, there were people who were staying out late, and they were going, and they looked like they were having fun, and there were boys involved. So, sure, sign me up. You hang out in the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. So I started working the steps, sort of started to trying to not lie as much. So I wasn't going to try and be honest, but just maybe not lie as much. Because they were starting to catch up. I never knew intention of staying around or with these people. Like, no, you don't understand. Like a bomb. I just show up and boom, then I'm gone. No more. Even if you're, like, right down the road from me, like, you just don't talk. I'm an excellent bridge burner. And people in AA aren't like that. They call you. And then they corner you at a meeting. And they're like, hey, I called you. And I'm like, which number are you? I don't know you. And they're like, oh, the one that's been calling you every day. And they just wore me down. You know, and before I knew it, I was having fun. I went to dances. I danced because I didn't want to talk. And so I sort of, you know, like, well, talking is awful, dancing is awful, but at least that's in the dark. So, you know, I sort of started to make my own way in sobriety. And, you know, the fellowship kept me sober for a long time. I did a fourth and fifth step. I was not honest, pretty much honest, 99% honest, but I didn't realize I had to write honestly about the stuff that happened after you stopped drinking. Like, I thought, like, this is just all, like, everybody else's, like, life is like mine. Like, all the stuff I'm doing is what normal people do. But no, apparently, I'm still doing all the same stuff. Just not drinking. And things got great. You know? Even if you're not living, like, a perfectly spiritual life, A will work wonders through your life if you just don't have a car and you have to call people for rides every day. So, that's what I did. And, it probably was what saved me. And, you know, before I knew it, I had a year. And I was, you know, I made amends with my parents, and, you know, I was working, and I was trying to think about going back to school, and, you know, life just sort of, like, doing my thing. And then it sort of settles into, like, the nitty-gritty of, you know, being a sober woman in AA. And I think this is probably about, you know, let's see, I was born in 2006, so probably about 2008-ish, about 2 years, probably came up here around two and a half years. I'd gone back to school, and I was getting my degree, and I had all these amazing outside things. And that's great. Outside things will certainly make you happy. I don't know about usefully whole, though. And this is sort of the part of my story where it's like, okay, what have I been doing for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. Step work and praying and sort of that whole side of sobriety was not my strong suit. You know, I was not interested in your God of understanding, nor mine. You know, I had gotten sober with a very clear understanding that my life was my fault. You know, I got myself into this mess, and I can certainly get myself out of it. You know, I was not a foxhole prayer, and I didn't start puking until later. So I didn't even have sort of those, like, I swear I'll never do it again sort of moments. And even then, it was a lot more conditional. It was like, okay, 4/9 of Jägermeister, not a good idea. We need to mix it up with some cheap vodka, Goldschlager, and we'll see what happens. Not a good idea either, by the way. But I just didn't want it. You know, I had, and it even took me a long time, but I started to realize, like, where God was working, because obviously I had to go to meetings, I had to share, and I had to talk about God, because you're in AA, and that's what you do, so I didn't really tell anybody that I wasn't praying, and I sort of would occasionally mention to my sponsor that I might not be doing my daily sitting, like I should be, sort of, maybe, occasionally, like, never, Ever. And you know my pigeon family. So that was, you know, that's a big secret. You know, but it's not one you're even realizing, because I was talking like I had something. I'm sure there were probably lots of people out there who saw through it. But they didn't call me on it, and that's one nice thing. I mean, I know that when I talk to women today who are obviously not quite aligned with the beam, it's just, you know, you smile and you nod, and, you know, it's what we do. They'll learn eventually. And although now I have tried to say, like, look, you don't have to do it the way I did. You can do this right from the beginning. Like, just get to it. Because then it just got harder, you know. And I switched sponsors. And my sponsor was a woman, became a woman who I admired her sobriety very much. She had many years and definitely had a spiritual life that I wanted. But I was very scared of her. I didn't allow myself the option of being really honest and giving her a chance, or giving me a chance with her. And so that fear just kind of grew. And, you know, over the next couple of years, it just got worse. You know, and to, it was, you know, at the time, I mean, it's sort of like, I don't know, you're just sort of like going through your emotions, you know, and occasionally it gets really bad, and I'm like, okay, I gotta do something different. And I didn't have the courage of my own convictions, I didn't have the courage of my own sobriety, you know, I sure as heck didn't have a God at all, and, that was about the time when I started to feel that lack, because I had, talking to a woman, and, you know, something she said to me, she's like, who do you spend most of your time thinking about? You know, and it wasn't even myself, it was my sponsor, and he lived in a lot of fear. It had nothing to do with her, you know, it was just all me, and I couldn't get past it, and so, you know, I had to, so now I am 5 years sober. I've just moved in with my fiancé, who's now my husband, moving out of an apartment with my best friend and pigeon sister, moved in on, like, a Saturday, and by Thursday, I'd had a sponsor, got a new sponsor, new roommate, new, like, I mean, just everything started changing very, very rapidly, and very, very, like, I mean, just, like, in amazing ways, but amazing hard ways. You know, I did not have a lot of tools when I got to that point, to know how to do anything, you know, but I was bound and determined, that this would have to be different. You know, I had learned, I mean, kind of long enough, you do learn something, at least enough in, like mental knowledge that, like, okay, the same person drinks again. And I was like, okay, well, the same person has the same sponsorship relationship again, because I am bringing all of that garbage with me. And I at least had sort of enough basic knowledge to know that that's what was happening. And, you know, so my new sponsor and I sat down and did a very thorough writing of, like, that whole thing. It wasn't, like, columns. I mean, this was just to get it all out, and then you're going to get all of your part, which turned out to be a lot bigger than I thought it was, which made sort of the healing process go a lot faster. But, you know, I was, I think for the first time in my entire sobriety, like, absolutely honest. Like, to the, like, bone-crunching gut honest. You know, and that's, it's hard. I mean, literally. But it's, I call my sponsor. I don't call her every day. But I think I've written more inventory in the last 4 months than I've ever written in my entire life. I want something different. And I am finally ready to put the work in. That being said, you know, most of that work comes in the form of, like, guess what, again, today. But I am at least telling somebody. Gotten into the really bad habit of yelling at people who had no defense against me, whatever. Cable people, cell phone people, any sort of customer service representative. I mean, it was impressive. And not in a good way. And so that has been looked at. And, you know, she has slowly helped me to change my behavior. Because that's what we're trying to work with right now. But it's, you know, it's amazing. You know, it's hard. I tried to not want anything. I mean, you're in a sobriety. Like, I really just want to kind of live my life and do all that. And now I'm probably living more comfortably. I know it doesn't seem like that to people on the outside because a lot of it was just stuff that I was telling myself in my own head. When the only voice up there has been, like, mine and my made-up sponsor's voice because I didn't talk to her as a person, and conversations in my head. So a lot of things that a lot of people might have said were heard just wrong. If I bother to talk about it at all, you know, and apparently there is a level of vulnerability and genuineness that on a good day wants to bring into my life. And that's hard. You know, it's hard to still call my sponsor and be like, yeah, I'm still not praying. But it's getting better. I actually have started to occasionally pray. And when I can call her and be like, guess what I did? I didn't call the truck that just honked at me. I got his number and the number of his company, and I didn't call them to tell him how bad of a driver he was and that he was honking at me, even though I had a really crappy day. But you know what? I am actually here telling you about it, so obviously something has shifted. And, you know, it's amazing. I mean, it's sort of in retrospect, it's like, no wonder I didn't want to talk about any of this stuff. You know, I wanted to fill my car with new people, and I wanted to drive around and just, you know, tell horrible drinking stories, you know, because that's actually sort of what I could handle and relate to. And thus, it was probably, you know, didn't sponsor a lot of people, because I didn't have a lot to offer as far as the genuine, like, bone-deep sobriety or spiritual side, anything, to offer. And that's, you know, and so it's just been sort of a reevaluation of what Anne Lynn's old ideas are. And just really sort of being able to be honest with myself and accept that honesty. You know, I am very negative to myself in my own head. You know, I have sort of a very skewed view of my own thoughts, usually, because I'm still an alcoholic, so I think about me a lot, usually in relation to other people. And that's still there. You know, and I think one of the most interesting conversations I've had with my sponsor is just how negative that is. And we were having coffee one night, and she's like, that's your God-sized hole. And I was like, I can't believe it. There's no way I think that about myself. Like, no, I do not have that self-esteem. Thank you very much. I'm fine. And, you know, I can't. That's not something. And I had never really thought about this whole concept of, like, a God-sized soul. Like, it just never even occurred to me. Like, that's actually what we were trying to do here. Because I didn't want to look at that. You know, nobody wants to admit to anybody else, like, I really don't like myself very much, and it's a bone deep belief, and you know, and then sort of all of the stuff that comes with it. Because if I think that way about myself, then you can bet that I think each and every one of you are thinking even worse about me. But there's hope on the positive side. I still think you're all thinking about me, but. You know, I can stand up here and say that, you know, and it's, my sponsor keeps telling me, like, because her sponsor always tells her, like, who knew that living happily ever after would be so much work? I did not plan for this one. But when it works, And I know, like, right there with I know, like, all of, like, my negativity. Like, I know that there is something here. There is a solution here. I've had it at various points and times in my life, and, you know, I did not spend 5 years showing up in meetings without any God, without any evidence of, you know, him working in my life. And there have been very specific points where it was like, okay, I have really no control over this. I have to give this up to you, and I have to be okay with that outcome. Like, I can't make him stay, and I have to be okay with whatever happens after that. And so, you know, I have been able to get through things like that. You know, I've been able to show up for my family, not cause any more damage. You know, I was there when my grandfather passed away. I've been able to be there for friends, you know. And so sort of a lot of the outside stuff has, to people, actually changed a lot, you know, because it, like, it, you know, clue who I was. And it's just starting to, like, I mean, it's been a crazy year. So sort of between, like, the fiancé, now husband, and the sponsor, and the apartment, and a wedding, which is amazing, that my mom and I planned without yelling at each other to the very end. So there is a God. And, you know, new jobs, being sick, like, trying to convince myself that people don't think that I'm lying about this. You know, and it's just been, you know, I don't know, in 5 years, what have I learned? And it's never too late to get honest, I guess, is something I never thought I'd say. And it doesn't matter what it is, you know, and it is going to be as bad as you think it is. But, you know, I told my sponsor the other night, I'm like, usually it's getting better, but my day, like, if I have a situation that presents itself and I end up thinking, like, about my sponsor, I've tried to turn that into, like, okay, well, I think about my sponsor, maybe I should pray about this. And so very slowly, like, things have started to, like, come into my life at a very slow rate, but there's a level of transparency that I don't have to hide behind anymore. You know what? I'm not the only person who doesn't pray in AA. There's people out there not praying right now. Who knew? And, you know, and it's, you know, it's crazy as it sounds because I don't think people actually believe it. I am more comfortable. You know, maybe not right now because I'm working on my fourth step. I'm doing my fifth step in 10 days, March 10th. Yeah, anyways. I'm seriously writing my fourth step. I'm not really writing my fourth step. I have started, I've thought about it. I usually end up writing an inventory about what I did that day, because that, to me, is a lot easier now than sitting down to deal with a lot of the resentments that are really still sort of bone deep. You know, all the superficial ones, like that guy, the preacher's kid in my church from 7th grade that I had this huge crush on, I've managed to let him go, you know. And the kid that was his friend that put a spider down my back in, like, 4th grade, I've managed to let that go too. You know, but there's a lot more coming. You know, and things are changing, but in good ways. Like, I finally feel, like, equipped to handle a maybe more mature in a relationship with my parents. Who knew? I don't just have to say yes and then, like just go and do whatever, like, they want. I can have input, you know, because they're, you know, it's not, I can't make other people happy. You know, all I can do is try and be, you know, genuine and vulnerable, you know, in all aspects of my life. At least that's what I'm shooting for now, you know, and I'm hopeful. I love AA. I don't know if I ever see that, really, when I speak at all. But usually because I was always trying to, like, get all the right words out. But it's amazing when more people usually, like, I share in meeting, like, the people who have more than 5 years, we're talking, like, 10, 15, 20 years, like, oh, yeah, 5 years. Yeah, I don't envy that. It was just a rough time. And then, like, I'm looking at the girl that's got, like, less than 24 hours, and I'm like, can I please get in your car? Can I come with you just to, like, be around you? One called me, I guess it was Thursday night at, like, 10:30, because it's, like, her first night sober, because last night she, like, 2 days ago, she had a DUI, And now she got drunk last night. She had to go to an AA meeting. I'm like, well, of course. That makes sense. I used to do that in Richmond all the time. Actually, I went a couple years ago and spoke at a meeting in Richmond, and a lady came up to me. She's like, I remember you. We were at this church, like, downtown, and she's like, you're so drunk, you couldn't even stand up. I was like, oh, my God. How do you know that? How do you remember that? And she's like, I'm sober. Okay, wow. But normally I just sit in the bushes or the bathrooms, or I sat in the parking lot and drank. Because technically I went to the meeting. Didn't say anything about going inside. I was there. But she, you know, and it's one of those things. Like, you know, people who can, like, call newcomers and just speak so eloquently and offer them so much hope, and I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm like, I suggest Lifetime or some entertainment television. You know? And, like, it's 11 o'clock, and you don't want to go out. Your friends are out. You know? You don't have a car. You can't leave. I don't know. It sucks. I'm sorry. You know? But you only have to do this once. And, like, if you are just willing to hang on and just try it, I promise, it gets better. And have the faith of that conviction to see that. Because I know that when I look at my life now, I actually feel that way about AA. I feel that way about my involvement. I feel that way about the people I meet and the relationships that I'm mending that they don't even know were broken. But, you know, just knowing that, you know, if I get off the team, it's fine. You know, I would never, you know, see some of the stuff that I've heard myself say to myself to anybody else. You know, and realizing that I am allowed to be nice to myself. Who knew? I was like, it's just being so selfish and self-centered. And my sister's like, no, that's called being miserable. It's like, So, lots of new ideas, like, happening all the time. Who knew? All by being honest. Or on a prayer thing. But I do love AA. I love the opportunities that AA has afforded me, not just in the car, school, husband, job arena, but that most of the time, all the stars align right, I can be pretty comfortable. At least enough so to, like, I can call my sponsor and tell her how miserable I am. But that's getting better soon. You know, she gets so excited over the smallest progress. And I love her for it. You know, because I am genuinely excited to, like, getting back on the beam. It's such, like, a fun thing now that it's, like, all out in the open. So, I don't know if I talked long enough. Am I good? So, thank you very much, Sam, for asking me. I feel like this is a little more scattered than it was a couple years ago, but probably hopeful, a lot more meaningful, at least for me it was. So thank you for being sort of a safe place to actually talk about it sort of publicly for the first time. So thank you very much.